Hello, I'm Paul Allen. This is number 0507, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Older, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0507. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is back. He's on to talk about the origins of the moon.
What this latest study now that was published in the journal Nature Geoscience, we've been able to use supercomputer modeling to really tease out details of how that process actually went, and that it was in fact indeed a very violent process.
Anne Walsh, author of Out of the Mouths of Moms. She interviewed mothers from all walks of life and backgrounds to write this book.
I didn't want a cookie cutter book because motherhood isn't cookie cutter. I mean, there's such a variety of ways that mothers are taking on their role. So they might be working, they might be at home, they might be entrepreneurs who work from home. They might have a partner, no partner, or maybe they weren't expecting to get pregnant and now they have a child, or it took them 12 years to actually get pregnant, or they went through adoption. There's such a variety. What they all had in common was it was a lot harder than they thought, and they could have used some extra support.
Broadcaster and actor Doug Price, who has created some short vignettes under 2 minutes called Doug Price on Life.
You know, I'm just so happy to be able to do it. I mean, it's simple. It takes care of its life, and I'm never any shortage of things to talk about in my twisted life.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0507, was Paul Allen, a long-distance trucker from Winnipeg, Manitoba. Thank you very much, Paul, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Florida couple are facing criminal charges after they were caught having sex on the sidewalk outside police headquarters in Key West. Police say that Gary Hill and Crystal Francis had shared a pint of vodka before they began trysting in public. Cops learned about the coupling around 9 p.m. from a female passerby who reported that a duo were poised to have sex in front of headquarters. When a patrolman went outside to investigate, he spotted the 46-year-old Hill with his pants down having sex with Francis, who was not wearing pants or underwear. The couple, lying down on the sidewalk, was actively engaging in sexual intercourse, police charge. "I'm horny," Hill explained when confronted by the officer. "She was giving it up to me right then and there." Hill would also chalk up the illicit encounter as a Key West moment. Hill was arrested for indecent exposure. Francis was not arrested since she was severely intoxicated and was taken to hospital for treatment. Well, you know, if you're going to have sex in public, which we all know is a crime, you might as well do it in front of police headquarters. It certainly saves time and distance when it comes to the arrest. I have one bone to pick with this story, though, pardon the pun. Crystal wasn't charged because she was severely intoxicated. Since when has severely intoxicated been a defense for not facing justice? Yeah. A 33-year-old man from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, was arraigned April 29th on two counts of one of the most favorite charges in the history of the Stuff File program.
Abuse of corpse.
He was also charged with one count of criminal mischief after he flushed his grandparents' ashes down the toilet. Thomas Porter Wells was living at his mother's house when she became fed up with his drinking and marijuana use and asked him to leave last September. Denise Porter told police she learned from a relative in February that Before leaving, Wells had disposed of her parents' remains, which had been stored in a box as part of a memorial in her bedroom. Wells denied flushing the ashes, but he later texted his mother that he would flush her remains too after she died.
Abuse of corpse.
Well, we know that kid's out of the will. 8 times in 2 weeks, fire crews had to deal with burning fields of grass in Johnson County, Iowa. Deputies patrolling to look for the arsonist saw a man trying to extinguish a grass fire by stomping on it. That man, authorities say, was the assistant chief of the fire department of Oxford, Iowa, Timothy Hora. And documents say there was a warm blowtorch in Hora's truck. But after charging him with operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated, the authorities released him. Then there were 2 more fires, and authorities said they linked Hora's truck to the area with GPS data from a monitor on his truck. This time, he was held on $50,000 bond. You know, firefighting is one of those professions where you don't want to be seen drumming up business. And by the way, police charged him for drunk driving but ignored the warm blowtorch in his vehicle. There is definitely something lacking in both the police department and the fire department in Oxford, Iowa. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the horrified clerk of a 7-Eleven in Middletown, Massachusetts, called 911 after a man came into the store without clothes on, bought a Diet Coke, and then drove away in a black Mercedes-Benz. Police were in the area and spotted the car moments later and found the male driver and female passenger both fully dressed. The woman, 29-year-old Tammy McDougall, told an officer that the man was her boyfriend and she dared him to do it because it was legal in Rhode Island. By the way, it isn't. 60-year-old John H. Walsh was charged with disorderly conduct and put on administrative leave by his employer. He is a captain at the nearby Linfield Fire Department and has been with the department for 40 years. An ironic tale, considering that most firefighters know when to put their hoses away. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There is a story out there about how scientists have used computer models to simulate how the moon may have been formed. Well, obviously, this is a story we have to bring Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, in on. Andrew is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter.
Nice to have you back on the program once again. Well, I guess we can now eliminate the idea of the moon is made of cheese.
That's right. Yeah, that's for sure now.
Okay.
We're good with that.
When you saw this story, your thoughts, is this something that is a common idea, a common thought as to how this moon was formed, or do you have any issues with it? What?
No, I mean, I think this is a fantastic detective story that's really been unfolding for so many years. I mean, you know, we all look up at the moon and, you know, since time immemorial, I mean, humans, I think even ancient humans sitting around those campfires had stories of this beautiful silvery orb hanging in the sky. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, the scientists have really been in earnest looking to discover the origins of Earth's, you know, only natural companion. Especially, you know, it was put into overdrive when the Apollo missions happened, you know, some 50 years ago now, where there were a lot of samples brought back from the surface of the moon. And really that started to tell the story of that the moon and Earth share a common heritage of some sort. Now, the question has always remained, how was the actual birth process, how did that go down? We really haven't had a clear picture, and there have been competing theories, but no way to really take the next step. And, you know, with what this latest study now that was published this week in the journal Nature Geoscience, we've been able to use supercomputer modeling to really tease out details of how that process actually went, and that it was in fact indeed a very violent process.
We should mention what the process is. Apparently, the moon may have been formed after a giant Mars-sized rock hit a magma-covered newborn Earth, according to this study, which leads me to a couple of questions. I know you know the sizes of all the planets in relation to Earth. What's the largest? What's the smallest? Again, refresh our memory. If it's a Mars-sized rock, how large is Mars compared to the Earth?
Well, Mars is about one-third the mass of our planet. It's quite a big deal to think of a celestial object of the size of Mars slamming into Earth. And I have to say, with this new study, what they're saying also is very interesting. Is these computer models are showing all the different variations of how that impact may have happened, and it's telling us that what's happened is that we think Earth and all the neighboring planets are about 4.5 billion years old, and we think this collision between our proto-Earth, our young baby Earth, and this other young planet, Mars-sized planet, may have occurred only 50 million years into the formation of the Earth. So really early on in the history. And what this new study is also saying is that Earth at that time was just covered entirely with this ocean of magma, of liquid rock. And that the collision may not even have to have been a direct blow. It could have been something that happened in a glancing blow, and the gravitational pull of this glancing blow from this Mars-sized world would have pulled away so much of the magma that was in these oceans of magma covering the Earth, that it would have gone into orbit. Much of this magma material would have been flung off of the Earth and deposited into an orbit, a circular orbit around the Earth, where they would have coalesced and formed the moon. So basically, Peter, what we're saying here is that, and especially in this new model, they're saying up to 80% of the moon's material actually came from the Earth. And this is very different from the previous models that was saying that most of the moon was probably formed from that impactor, from that Mars-sized world that that we think actually impacted our planet.
The idea that the moon contains so much of what is Earth's, for lack of a better term, DNA, is this a theory that explains any other planets and their moons, or is this something that is unique to us as far as we know?
Well, that is a wonderful question. What we're noticing is that when we're looking, in our reconnaissance of the solar system over the past, 50 years or so, what we've seen is that most of the moons around other planets were formed actually outside of the sphere of influence of these planets. So what I'm saying there is that they were drawn in. These were wayward worldlets. These moons maybe were once their own independent asteroids floating around in the primordial solar system, and they were captured by the gravitational pull of the planets, and then they kind of got trapped in orbits around them. So that's, for instance, what we can see in the moons of Mars. Mars has two moons, Deimos and Phobos, these very odd-like potato-shaped kind of moons that have very different chemistries than what Mars is. And we think Mars just captured these bodies from the asteroid belt. If we go into the outer solar system, like the gas giants like Jupiter and Saturn, which hold, hold court to dozens of moons, each of them. I mean, Jupiter has over 60 moons. Saturn has well over 30 moons now and counting. Most of those, we feel, were also captured by the intense gravitational pull of these giant planets.
Why is it that, has any theory been brought forth as to why we have just one moon, or even a planet that is smaller than ours and therefore would have less gravitational pull, like Mars, has more than one?
Well, you know, this is something that we're still trying to figure out is the history, the backstory of the inner solar system. Now, you know, when you look at the lay of the land of the solar system, you have the inner solar system. This is the everything from Mercury out to the asteroid belt. They're terrestrial worlds. They're very rocky to Earth-like, solid surfaces, and they're quite small in respect to the gas giants that are in the outer solar system beyond the asteroid belt. And we think that the positioning of our planets weren't the same as they are now. And they were in different parts of different distances from the sun than we see each of these planets right now. And so the areas where they existed in the early part of the solar system may have been, like, there had been a lot of heavy traffic of worlds. And so for our planet, Earth, to have formed such a large moon, you know, something that is so large. I mean, our moon is about just under a third the width of the Earth, and it's the fifth largest moon in the solar system. So, just to give you an idea of the size difference, if our planet Earth was the size of a nickel, a 5-cent piece, the moon would be as big as a coffee bean. And so something that's so large orbiting our planet is very unusual for our inner solar system. We don't see that anywhere happening. And the computer models are suggesting the only way is through a huge impact of a Mars-sized object. And we think that in the early part of the solar system, there were a lot of these worlds flying around. It was really a traffic jam in the early part of the solar system. And that was all cleaned up within a few, hundreds of millions of years. All of those planets coalesced, slammed into each other, got swallowed up by the gravitational pulls, and cleaned out the inner solar system. And all that was left was a few small bits and pieces that were captured by the gravitational well of, like, Mars, for instance, having its two moons. That's all that was left.
Well, we have less than a minute, so I'd only ask, now that we've had this computer model, this study, does this change the theory of anything? And from this, how do we go forward in studying our Earth, our moon, and our solar system? Does it change anything that we thought about or think about or study going forward?
Well, I think all of these studies, really the formation of the moon and all of that, really harkens back to really what was our own planet like. And you have to remember, this is exciting for scientists because we want to know why Earth is so special in terms of life. Something was different about our planet from all the others. Is it just the placement, the distance that our planet is from the sun? Is there other factors involved on the sun? Maybe water, we think, was brought in by comets and asteroids that slammed into the early primitive Earth that brought forth our water, maybe seeded our planet with life, the building blocks of life. And so looking at our moon, we think that this study is telling us that it's much more Earth-like than we thought before. 80% of the moon could be really formed from primitive Earth. And there may be a lot of clues about the makeup of the primitive Earth, our own planet, as it was just at the cusp of when life started forming. And all of this information could very well be hidden between the layers of moon dust that sits there on the surface. So this is telling us we got to go back to the moon to tell the story of Earth and the origins of life on Earth, which is really some of the holy grail type of astronomical questions. We're going to have to go back to the moon and start digging into the surface of the moon to tell that story.
Fascinating stuff indeed, Andrew. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for being on with us once again.
My pleasure, and clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy, and author of Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0507. And you'll find links to his site and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of Out of the Mouths of Moms. Plus, broadcaster and actor Doug Price will be on talking about Doug Price on life. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site, because that would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff, shall we? The Lankenau Medical Center in suburban Philadelphia was the site of a break-in on the morning of April 20th, but it was the stolen loot that leaves many scratching their heads. Two men and a woman stuffed several colonoscopes worth $450,000 into three backpacks. The scopes are used to examine colons during colonoscopies. This is not something that a typical pawn shop might accept, said Lower Merion Police Detective Sergeant Michael Weiss. I guess it's a good idea to have a police officer named Weiss, huh? My feeling would be that it is some type of black market sales, he went on to say. He also said that it's not yet clear whether it was an inside job. Well, inside job might be a poor choice of words for the detective, but I'm sure police will get to the bottom of this one. It is a probing case, no ifs, ands, or buts. Shauna says while she was away from her Portland, Oregon apartment, her phone's dog app alerted her that her dog was barking inside the apartment. She activated her dog camera and, she said, all of a sudden I see this guy coming out in a towel from my bathroom. She did not recognize the man, who apparently had just come out of her shower, and she called police while she was on her way home. When she arrived, she let police in, and they caught the intruder. His face was just like shock, like, oh my God, I can't believe I was caught, she said. He was wearing my black bra, a black bathing suit bottom that I have, and a white cover-up. And handcuffs. 22-year-old Kai Phillips is charged with burglary and theft. You know, it would be embarrassing if those pictures were posted as who wore it better. Police in Maine say a man who robbed a bank used his unwitting father as a getaway driver. Keith Tilton dropped his 39-year-old son, Joseph Donald Tilton, at a Lewiston bank Tuesday afternoon, believing his son needed to cash a check. In the few minutes he was inside, police say Joseph Tilton actually robbed the bank. After dropping his son off in a different part of Lewiston, Keith Tilton drove past the bank and was stopped by police, who had the getaway car's description. Keith Tilton isn't charged, as police don't think he knew what was happening. Joseph Tilton is charged with felony robbery, accused of stealing $620. You know, after he eventually gets out of jail, I'm sure his father will want to ground him. He probably won't allow him to use the car either. You know, that story is similar to one that actually happened in my family several years ago. My uncle, who was a taxi driver, took a fare and then drove to a bank, and the guy robbed the bank and then got back into the taxi cab and they drove off. And the only reason my uncle wasn't charged with anything is because the guy who robbed the bank called for a taxi in the first place when my uncle picked him up. He didn't just hail a cab, he called a cab, and my uncle showed up, and then the robbery took place. So it proved that it was random. But wow, that's chutzpah in both cases, using somebody else unwittingly to be your getaway driver. The only thing that could be worse than that is taking the bus. Anyway, finally in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, security cameras outside a Washington State car service store captured the moment two men stole an entire Pepsi vending machine, despite the police station being right across the street. Ryan King, owner of Performance Lube Center in Spokane Valley, said he arrived for work Wednesday morning and immediately noticed something rather large was missing. "We have had small thefts, but nothing this drastic," King said. "As soon as we got in, we could tell it was gone." King reviewed surveillance camera footage and saw two men tipping the 700-pound monstrosity of a machine into the bed of a pickup truck. "I was amazed because it's pretty heavy," King said. "It just goes to show how brazen criminals are." The theft was made all the more unbelievable by the fact that the store is right across the street from the police station. "I doubt I'll ever get the machine back," King said, "but I'd like to see those two spend a couple of nights in the Iron Bar Motel." The owner said it appeared that thieves had attempted to steal the machine a few weeks before, but weren't able to do more than cut the power and knock it over. I don't know. What are the odds that the two guys who stole the machine work for Coca-Cola? Coke employees might be the police department's best pool of suspects. In any case, I'm sure someone at corporate Pepsi is revving up the advertising department to come up with a new commercial with this scenario.
You got the right one, baby!
Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Sunday, May 12th is Mother's Day, so this is a good time to talk about a book on motherhood. And Walsh spent a year interviewing mothers from all walks of life, with the end result being her new book, Out of the Mouths of Moms. Anne joins us on the line right now from Kempville, Ontario. Hi, Anne.
Hello, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. So you put together this book by talking to a whole bunch of moms. What was the idea of doing this book in the first place? What led to it?
Well, my experience of motherhood, I was a bit shocked by how overwhelmed I was after I had my second daughter. I wanted children. I loved being a mom. And we had just moved out to the country, and I just felt cut off from everyone. And I was so sleep deprived. And I remember thinking, all these people had children before I did. Nobody really mentioned this. They all seemed to, whenever I saw them, they all seemed to be doing great. And I thought, is it just me? I mean, I thought I was going to be really good at this, and I'm just not. And so is it personal? Am I not cut out to be a mom? Am I failing as a mom? I generally just felt like I wasn't doing very well while my children were very young. I had my eldest daughter, and she was upset by the arrival of this new baby. And I talked to other moms about it and said, you know, how is your daughter or son adjusting to their sibling? Oh, they're the best helper, and they love their little sister or brother. And it made me feel so bad that, what did I do wrong? Did I not prepare her enough? Am I not giving her enough attention? And so I really felt like I was failing. And fast forward years later, I left my job as a college professor, because I really wanted to work from home. And I went back to what I used to do, which was art therapy. And as women were coming to see me, all of these women would come in and they would tell me super similar stories. And I would think, well, that's exactly what the other mom was going through. And that's what that mom was going through. And I realized that all these women were suffering alone in their homes, and then putting their act on to go out to look like they were just doing great. And it's a huge disservice, because as long as they were each suffering independently, there was no community, and it was pathologized because everyone else is doing okay. So initially, I had a group come together. I thought, I'm going to do group work. And that way, once they hear each other's stories, they'll realize they're not alone. The problem is, as soon as they were in a group, the way they communicated completely changed. And instead of just crying or saying how overwhelmed they were or frightened or feeling like a failure, they would talk about being sleep deprived and their kids weren't sleeping and their husbands weren't helping. The whole dialogue changed. So they weren't actually talking about the important stuff. And I realized that it's sort of, I've summed it up as motherhood has become a competitive sport. And so because there are so many different ways of mothering, we have more choices and options than ever. And so we're all making all these different choices. And then we try to convince ourselves that we've made the right one. And then we compare ourselves to other people. And somehow that makes us competitive, like, oh, well, she's doing that. That's why that's not working out. And she should have done like what I'm doing. And if you're competing, that makes you enemies. And when you're enemies, you can't be vulnerable. And so there's this whole guard up about, yeah, I'm doing fine. I'm great. And as long as we keep doing that, we can't be there for each other. And as women, connection is key. We need to feel connected to people. And if we're not able to open up and be authentic, then it's a challenge to our mental health, because we have to be able to talk about these things openly, honestly. And when we do, then we realize that we're not alone. And it takes the whole stigma away. Then you realize, oh my gosh, we're all feeling the same way. This now, must be really hard.
Now, it's interesting you said at the beginning that you seemed more overwhelmed having your second child than when you had your first. Yeah. Is that normal, or is it usually the other way around? Sometimes women seem to be a little overwhelmed when they have their first child, and by the time they have their second or third, it's old hat.
Yes. Well, the combination for me, when I had my first child, we were living in a suburb, and I could walk everywhere. I could just take the baby, put her in the stroller, and I could walk to two different parks. I could walk down to groceries. I could get a coffee at a local coffee shop. And so, my mother, who I'm really close to, could take a bus that would take her right to the corner of my street. So I had stuff going on. It wasn't that overwhelming. But then after we had our second child, we had moved to have a bigger house because my husband was working from the house at the time. And so we moved so he could work from our property, but not in the house. And we were in a rural setting. I knew no one. My mother, who was supportive with my first child, was about an hour away and didn't have a car. And shortly after I had my second daughter, and that my eldest was reacting, you know, she was very upset and wouldn't let me comfort her because she was angry at me for having her. So it was like the perfect storm. And then my husband was diagnosed with PTSD, and he's not military. He was triggered by the birth of our daughter because he had suffered a lot of abuse in his home as a child. And what I have since learned is that many people who have had abusive situations when they're young in their childhood end up being triggered by the birth of the first child or the second child. So in this case, our second child looks a lot more like him. And I think that that was a trigger. So all of a sudden, I was dealing with all of these different factors, which just kind of piled up. And it made me feel more isolated. I didn't know anybody out here. So I couldn't just say, hey, can I stop by for a cup of coffee? Or do you want to meet? Everybody was far. And then the people around me, my mom couldn't be around me unless I went to pick her up. My daughter was upset with me, and my husband was dealing with so much that I needed to be supportive of him, whereas I actually really needed him. So it was like the perfect storm of all of these elements coming together.
Is writing the book something for you that was kind of cathartic in the sense that, well, I hate to say it this way, misery loves company. The fact that you're just not alone in your situation is in a way a certain amount of comfort.
Well, for me, that came with when I was doing the groups. As soon as I started hearing from other women, it started to click for me, like, wait a minute, this wasn't just about the situation that I was in. This happens a lot. And why aren't we talking about this? By the time I wrote the book, I was writing it because I needed other people to have that experience that I had. The relief of, okay, this is a thing, and it's made worse through silence, And it's made better when we actually speak our truth and we're honest with each other and we can be mutually supportive. The best way that I could think of, because I couldn't get women to really say the same things when they're around each other, I thought if I wrote their stories, they can read each other's stories. And because I don't name the moms in my book, they were able to be very honest without feeling exposed.
Your book also brings together some different moms of different ages, moms of different cultures. So it's a mosaic of motherhood, is it not?
Yes, and that's really what I was looking for. When I set out to write the book, I didn't want a cookie cutter book because motherhood isn't cookie cutter. I mean, you know, there's such a variety of ways that mothers are taking on their role. So they might be working, they might be at home, they might be entrepreneurs who work from home. They might have a partner, no partner, maybe they weren't expecting to get pregnant and they did, and now they have a child, or it took them 12 years to actually get pregnant, or they went through adoption. There's such a variety. And what they all had in common was it was a lot harder than they thought, and they could have used some extra support.
We've got less than a minute, so I've got one more quick question I want to ask, and that is, the book is called Motherhood from the Source. It's obvious that you're trying to get information out there to potential moms. Is this also a good book for the men in their lives, for dads?
It's an eye-opener for men for sure, and I think it's a good tool to open up communication about what's helpful and what's not. But I want to mention that I am following up with another book where I will be interviewing men. And I'm thinking of calling it Daddy's Diary, but I haven't done all the searches to make sure that name hasn't been taken in some way. So I don't want to pronounce the name right now, but I have already lined up some men to do a second book because I think it's sort of like a men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of thing, where I think it's good to have both sides because there are misunderstandings from men and from women because we're changing. We're constantly changing and redefining our roles. And so one of the things that struck me while I was interviewing women is that many of their husbands had something significant happen in their life right after they had the baby. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, yes, my husband had this big fight with his dad and they haven't spoken since, or, oh, he got fired, or something massive. And I started to be intrigued by this pattern. And I saw that there's actually postpartum for men and it's got different symptoms than for women. And so oftentimes I think it goes undiagnosed. And this is important because if this day and age when we don't have as many supports, maybe family supports around us, we rely even more heavily on our husbands. And if our husbands are not supported or doing well, then that affects our mental health as well. And so I think the more we understand about how to support women and men after they've had a baby, the better off families will be, the children and the parents.
The book is called Out of the Mouths of Moms.
Yes.
And it's written by Anne Walsh. Anne, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Anne Walsh, author of Out of the Mouths of Moms. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0507. And you'll find links to Anne's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones. And this is Let's Be Fair. Actually, it's our last edition of Let's Be Fair. After 10 years of sharing stories about some of the wackiest warning labels in America and giving you an insider's look at just how out of whack our legal system and government bureaucracy can be, we're hanging up our microphone. It's been an educational and often entertaining journey researching these stories each week. Our goal has always been to talk about how we can improve things in this amazing land of opportunity we call home, and we'll continue that mission. Just in other ways. I'd like to thank all of the radio hosts, producers, and managers who have shared your audiences with us along the way. We've been able to engage good people in every corner of America in a conversation that we'd like to think has helped move the process of improving government forward. Let's Be Fair was originally developed and then nurtured over the years by Steve Nolan, Todd Young, and Philip Nolan. Great job, guys. And to all of you out there, thanks for listening.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to legendary Montreal broadcaster Doug Price. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And a few more Stuff File news to share with you here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a New Jersey theme park said the malfunction that sent two roller coaster crash dummies crashing into the roof of a neighboring hotel was a problem with the dummies, not the ride itself. Parkland's Castaway Cove in Ocean City said the roller coaster's safety precautions were not to blame when two water-filled dummies flew off the Gale Force roller coaster and crashed into the roof of Ebb Tide Suites next door to the park. This was a mishap with a water dummy itself, not with the ride in any way, a park representative said. There is nothing more to add. Brian Hartley, the park's vice president, said the dummies were not as rigid as human bodies, allowing them to wiggle free of the safety restraints of the roller coaster. Obviously, it's not something that would ever happen with a person in it, Hartley said. You know you don't lose rigidity in a person. The lap bar comes down, you're secure in there. Gale Force, which reaches top speeds of 64 miles per hour, opened in 2017. Officials said the ride is tested for about 2 hours a day. Okay, who out there is buying the explanation? And how many of you out there aren't? This is a PR spin control nightmare, and I'm sure the hotel next door is not too pleased either. Yeah. A man in northern Mexico had to be rescued after he accidentally trapped himself in a hole that he dug under a woman's house so he could spy on his former girlfriend in violation of a court order to stay away from her. The Sonora State Attorney General's office said the 50-year-old man had spent days digging a hole in Puerto Penasco, a town on the Gulf of California, only to become trapped and require assistance to get out. The man had been ordered to stay away from his former girlfriend due to domestic violence charges, and he is now in jail. The woman told police that over the course of a week, she had heard scratching noises but assumed the noise was cats. But when the sound grew louder, she investigated and found her former partner of 14 years trapped below. She said she ended the relationship because her partner was very jealous. Police said the man appeared intoxicated and severely dehydrated once they got him out of the tunnel. Boy, that seems to be a neat trick, to be drunk and severely dehydrated at the same time. So, this is a woman in Mexico who has a jealous boyfriend tunneling under her home. How will she be able to keep him out in the future? Has she ever considered building a wall? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Doug Price is a Montreal-based broadcaster and actor who is legendary amongst Montreal radio fans. Doug now has an audio blog where he shares his observations on life in a rather humorous way. He calls it Doug Price on Life. Before we get to Doug, here is one he did last month when he talked about greeting cards.
I seem to be buying way more greeting cards these days that have steadily veered off into the realm of aging cards. What used to be happy birthday cards, anniversaries, good luck with that, wedding cards have morphed into more get well soon, hope you're feeling better, wishing you a speedy recovery cards with gusts up to sympathy cards, and you will be missed cards. In fact, these days, more often than not, a card sent from me is not good news. Warning, do not open this card. It could be hazardous to your health. That's nice. I've become the Grim Reaper of greeting cards, which probably explains the very poor reception I received recently at my 50th high school reunion in Oak Bay, B.C. As a huge crowd of my former friends, classmates, and grads literally parted like the sea to get away from me, seemingly startled by my shirt, tie, of course sensible shoes, plus my white Armani lab coat and my stethoscope wrapped around my neck. Hey, where's everybody going? Yes, the retired doctor will see you now.
And here he is, the man himself, Doug Price, who clearly has survived his 50th high school reunion. Hi, Doug.
barely.
Nice to have a chance.
I had to show up with my diploma. It was quite embarrassing.
Nice to have a chance to talk with you. When did you start putting together these Doug Price on Life bits?
Well, it's so strange. I had no idea that it would actually happen. I remember sending a buddy of mine who's a bit of a writer and used to work for an advertising agency. I sent him a remembrance date of something actually I did on Shom a long time ago for Remembrance Day and Armistice and all that stuff. But and he said, wow, that's really good, because it was like sort of a poem I wrote, sort of something to do with using Flanders Fields as a base to do it. So he said, that's really good. Do you ever consider doing a blog or something? I've heard of a blog, but I have no idea. So anyway, he basically became the person that was the catalyst to do it. And he said, well, do you think you could do 4 a month? And I'm going, oh, no, no. Maybe I could do, no, 1. No. Whoa. But, you know, here we are. We're doing 4 a month since December of 2018.
Now, where do people get a chance to hear these?
Well, I'm just so untech. But there's this thing called the internet. Anyway, apparently, if you Google Doug, D-O-U-G, Price, P-R-I-C-E, you notice the way I spell it, DougPriceOnLife.com. Apparently, it goes Doug Price on Life, and you press that, and I wish I could explain it better, but I can't.
What's the inspiration for the pieces that you do? I mean, for instance, the one we just played, of course, deals with greeting cards and also your 50th high school reunion. But generally speaking, in the ones you've done, what's the inspiration for you?
It's just that, I don't know, as I age, I don't know, my mind just like just flies away. And I mean, I think the same sort of thought process that I had when I was on the radio was there. But then, you know, radio was like more like say something and then play a song. And then don't say anything at all and play a song. So when I was doing the electric lunch hour and stuff on Shom, I could still pick what I wanted. I could say what I wanted to. You know, it's music became like an exclamation mark. But now that I'm, you know, long time gone, I still like the idea of expressing myself. And I don't have the music. But I've got the thought press. I never am long for, looking for an inspiration or some sort of a thing that, a subject or a topic. So I've just sort of kept it around 2 minutes each one. And
Usually I'm going back in my own archives of my own experiences and just sort of creating it, you know, and just actually voicing it on my little iPhone and doing it all in one take because I don't know how to edit. So it's really like being on the radio again, only rather than, you know, sort of, it's just like being with you right now. It's just, I have no idea how it happens, but I'm delighted that I'm able to still do it.
Now, have you thought of the idea of actually, you know, going full circle and putting these on the radio? I mean, you know, they're very, very short. They're about a minute and a half in length. And these are the kind of things that across the country and across the continent, indeed, syndicate as features on their show.
Yes. Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I think when I, you know, after I realized that I was serious about this and had done a few months, I'm going, well, yeah, because I, you know, like to do a, get a little radio exposure. So I think I reached out to someone and didn't really hear back. So that made me think of Facebook and other things of ways of getting more exposure. It's not like, I mean, I'm just so thrilled to be doing it and having these thoughts and be able to put something together. I mean, it's like there's no shortage. So as far as more exposure, I'd sort of like, you know, the organic way of doing it, of just, you know, with some friends, and the radio would be lovely, but maybe it just doesn't work that way for me right now. I mean, it's a freebie sort of thing. So the important thing is the expression, you know. So I'm open to things, but I don't know how. I mean, I had somebody the other day said, why, you should be doing a podcast. And I'm going, well, what does that look? I could barely get on Facebook. I'm just the antithesis of someone who's a tech. So I guess there's other vehicles there. But, you know, I'm just so happy to be able to do it. I mean, it's simple. It takes care of its life. And I'm never any shortage of things to talk about in my twisted life.
Okay, well, let's talk about the one that we did play, and that, of course, is the way you talked about greeting cards. And I had to laugh because I tend to agree, as you get older, the greeting cards get more melancholy with each passing one that you get. But did you actually go to your 50th high school reunion in an Armani lab coat?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, just want to make sure.
I didn't. But I didn't take. I didn't wear my Montreal Canadiens jersey either. Only to the wine party. I did have that thing where people are running up and going, "Hey, Doug, man, we just love you. Come on, that was great." And I'm going, "I don't know who you are." So, but you don't want to look at the name tag because it kills it for them. I can't do that. In fact, people try and give me a name tag when you go to a reunion or some sort of thing where they're having an anniversary. And I'm just like, I don't do name tags. Please, if somebody wants, I'll introduce myself. Because I just can't stand that moment when, you know, you look down. So, no, I didn't do Armani. I do have an Armani suit, but it's black and, okay. You know, I white. Just, but it just made me think like a retired doctor. I just take the situation and make it totally impossible, but to get the point across, because that's the way my mind works. I should see a doctor.
The reason why I ask is because, and again, for people here in Montreal who know who you are and have seen your work, there is a running commercial where you actually, TV commercial, where you actually play a doctor. I just had to bring that.
As you said, I'd be probably better suited as a patient, but there you go. In fact, there's an amazing thing with that because I was sitting, like after these thing aired, I was sitting with my real doctor appointment getting my results. So the, you know, he's going, oh, so now you're the patient, eh? So it was a little scary. But anyway, it's, I'm just having a ball.
Well, you mentioned the fact that you are a bit of a techno Luddite, but I've got to tell you, these are fun. And I think one thing you'll discover in this day and age with technology is that it's impossible to keep an old broadcaster down. I know that from experience.
I'm doing my best. Let me help. I'm just, Peter, I never even dreamed I would have this possibility to express myself. I mean, I've sort of found ways you know, since I've used to work in radio, to find ways to take people there somewhere personally, you know, like in my own milieu and stuff like that. In the odd situation, I can just sort of, and then I'm going, oh my God, I can still do something. I don't think I found it. It found me.
And we're all glad that it did. People can find it by looking for Doug Price on Life. You can go online and find it. And Doug, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Peter, so nice to talk to you again. Are we on the radio?
Yes, Doug, we are on the radio. Legendary Montreal broadcaster Doug Price. You can find his tasty bits of social commentary online at DougPriceOnLife.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's that time, boys and girls, you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
One way to assure a negative response to a job application is to lift a few items from your prospective employer on the way out. So it went for an unnamed 36-year-old man in Gillette, Wyoming, who visited a Sportsman's Warehouse on April 24th, where he paid for some items with a rewards card, but also left the store with some bullets and a pair of sunglasses. Wow, there's a frightening combination for you, huh? A few hours later, the man returned and asked to fill out a job application, then walked out with two more pairs of sunglasses worth $85. This time, workers called police, who arrested the man and recovered all the stolen items. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're going into a place looking for a job, would you shoplift not once, but twice in the same day from the place that you just filled out an application for? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0507. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0507. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.